right, 3, 2. Oh, there she is. Hi. Like the dog jumping in on the start of episode number 111 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm just going to use that as the intro.
Hi, Lyko. Who's a good girl?
She, I was just telling you a minute ago. So yesterday we went on an 8-mile hike up in Park County, and she loved it. Loved it. I just posted a video on Instagram that I'm sure Nicole is going to make you watch like 100 times because it's the cutest damn thing.
Oh,
but,
boy.
We came home. We came home. Like, she's like a zombie right now. We came home yesterday. She went immediately to the bed, fell asleep for like 5 hours, and then finally got up and was like, I need to go pee. So I took her outside, and then she went back to bed and was just zonked out the entire night. She, like, ordinarily I'll walk into my room to get ready for bed, and she'll like lift her head up and be like, oh, you're done with work. All right, well, yeah, welcome into the room. Last night I walked in, I turned the light on, and she gave me like the ugh, like the looking at the light for the first time and somebody wakes you up look, you know, like where like her eye was all half closed. She looked so annoyed. And so today she's just laying out on the patio and just like looks like she's been knocked unconscious.
Yeah, well.
But now she's inside. She's laying on the bed again.
That video is awesome. I don't know, your dog had those kind of ups.
She's got hops, man. It's amazing. It's crazy. So anyway, hey.
Hi.
Hey, hi. I'm Tyler Mon.
We got a show for you today because I'm Anthony Masterson, and
we
I'm
do
ready
have a
to
show.
Sell you a new set of steak knives.
I would like to order the Ginsu knife. We do have one heck of a show for you today. I apologize for using strong language.
I'd even say it's a hell of a show.
What? How dare you?
Sorry.
Ryan McMahon, the hottest prospect name in the Rockies organization, maybe. Maybe it's Brendan Rodgers. He will join the show here coming up in just a little bit. Talked to Ryan last night for a story for MILB.com. Ryan went 4-for-4. Came a double away from the cycle. David Dahl went 3-for-5. He was also a double away from the cycle as the Albuquerque Isotopes got a victory over the Omaha Storm Chasers last night. So Ryan McMahon will join the show coming up here in just a little bit. We actually just hopped off the phone with him, and Ryan was terrific. And he'll probably have sun poisoning by the time he makes it to the ballpark today, and you'll hear
sorry.
Why. Sorry, it's our fault. Yeah, man, very excited.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Really good dude, and hopefully we're seeing him in Denver quite soon. So we will hear from Ryan McMahon here coming up in just a little bit.
Speaking of those boys in Denver.
Yeah.
Since the last time we talked.
Things were good, and then they were not good.
Yeah, things were good, and then they weren't. Funny how that works.
Hey, welcome in. Yeah. The 111th episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Hey, you can find us. We're on Twitter. We're at Purple Dinocast. Not recommended if you're a troll radio host.
Not Purple Dino Costa.
Also, you can find our shirts, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com, and you can get in touch with the show, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com as well. And before we get started, I do want to address something that is, I mean, it's a heartbreaker for those of us who have been around for a long time with this Colorado Rockies fandom of ours. Brent Doden, who everybody will know and remember as Captain Earthman, entered hospice care in Arvada late last month and passed away. The longtime Denver area vendor, sports vendor. He worked at Mile High. He worked at Coors Field. He worked at Red Rocks, but was a legend. I mean, walked around with his crazy hat with the frogs on it. And
gave you his card. You can call him on the cell phone, whenever you wanted a beer.
He would answer wherever he was in the ballpark. He would answer and ask you what section, what row, and would deliver a beer to your seat, and was the coolest dude at Coors Field for my entire childhood. Bought me my first legal beer on my 21st birthday when the Rockies played the A's at Coors Field in 2006, and passed away a brain tumor that had really, really taken its toll on him. I saw him at Coors Field on opening day this year, got a chance to say thank you and this is what you meant to all of us and blah, blah, blah. And fuck cancer, man.
Yeah, it sucks, man.
So
but he was a legend, man. He really was
an absolute legend. And we send all of our best wishes to his family. Anybody who is wishing to honor Earthman's legacy can donate to the Glenn Garcelon Foundation, which is a nonprofit that empowers and supports brain tumor patients. That is Glenn, G-L-E-N-N, Garcelon, G-A-R-C-E-L-O-N Foundation. It's glenngarcelonfoundation.org. You can find information on how to donate there. And just sucks, man. I mean, we knew this was coming for a long time. He had left his work last year, and the sickness. Actually, I think it was about the middle of 2016, and really was not expected to make it as long into 2017 as he did. But I mean, it's a crusher for anybody who grew up going to games. Anybody who remembers the crazy guy walking around with a weird hat and doing all that stuff at Coors Field or Red Rocks or Mile High or wherever. And so we're gonna miss you, Earthman. Gonna miss you. So that's the serious note, and we'll get on to talking some baseball. The Rockies made a deal this week that we'll talk about here coming up in a little bit. We're 3 days away from the trade deadline. We're recording this on Friday the 28th, and the Major League trade deadline. I didn't see any hot tweets from Woody Page.
No.
The Rockies got a new name for the TV network. So I don't know what that's all about, that he didn't respond to the Pat Neshek trade. But let's talk about the Pat Neshek trade.
First of all, let's just say happy anniversary, because it's the
two-year
anniversary
of
the Tulo trade.
It is indeed. It is indeed. Yeah.
And let's
give it a grade.
Yeah. Who really won that trade? So the trade was Troy Tulowitzki and LaTroy Hawkins to the Blue Jays for Jose Reyes, Jeff Hoffman, Miguel Castro, and Jesus Tinoco. Now, Castro was deemed uncoachable by the coaching staff in spring training and was shipped off, traded to the Baltimore Orioles. Tinoco was great when he came over in Asheville in that trade in 2015 and has since not been as great. He's currently in Lancaster, I believe.
This year has been better, but certainly is not what we saw that first year.
Jose Reyes got into domestic violence and was traded to the Mets. So good for him. And Jeff Hoffman is currently an inconsistent but talented starter in the Rockies rotation with the ceiling of probably a number two. So LaTroy Hawkins, he pitched for that year and then retired. And then Troy Tulowitzki has been really one of the worst offensive shortstops in the game since then.
Yeah. Yeah, not great.
So it's weird to say, like, who really won that trade? Because obviously Hoffman has shown flashes this year, but he hasn't necessarily been the guy that they would have hoped.
Yeah.
There's been games where it's been like, oh, yeah, he could definitely, be the number two.
He could be the guy. He could be the number two.
Then, I don't know. It's strange. It's hard to say. Like, at this point, considering Tulo has been so bad.
So bad. And this isn't us, wishing ill on Tulo. It's just he has legitimately been a below replacement level addition to that roster.
I mean, among qualified shortstops since the trade, Tulo is 25th in OPS, just ahead of Andrelton Simmons and Tim Beckham.
Yeah, not two guys that you think of for their offensive prowess.
No, he's behind guys like Daniel Descalzo, Marcus Semien, Eduardo Nunez.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
Don Scalzo.
Don Scalzo. We don't want to rag on Tulo. Tulo did a lot of great things for this organization.
No, but I mean, that was a watershed moment.
But the Rockies clearly cut bait at the right time, it would appear.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it hasn't panned out in the Rockies getting, three major prospects out of the deal by any stretch, but
like they thought, maybe.
But. Right. But I think at this time in 2015, if you would have said the Rockies are going to trade Troy Tulowitzki and they're going to get back a piece that looks like he has the ability to be a number two in a major league rotation after you've seen him for some time, I think you'd go, yeah, I'd take that deal. Jeff Hoffman, by the way, is still 24 years old.
Yes. Oh,
so,
yeah.
And you know,
it's
I mean,
first legitimately
exactly.
full-ish season of Major League Baseball.
And not only that, and we've talked about this from time to time, it's only his second full pro season in professional baseball at all. Jeff Hoffman was drafted with the 9th overall pick in 2014. Of course, one pick behind Kyle Freeland. He went to the Toronto Blue Jays. But he missed all 2014 after Tommy John surgery. He only made, in total, 20 appearances in 2015. So last year was his first full season. Last year combined, he made 8 appearances at the major league level, 22 appearances in Albuquerque. So that's his first wire-to-wire season. So this is only his second full pro season. And he's come across brilliantly in a handful of starts. He's also struggled, and that's what you're going to expect. But if you saw good Jeff Hoffman and played that video for a Rockies fan in 2015 and said, this is what the potential is for your acquisition, this type of guy for Troy Tulowitzki, I think most people would have taken that deal. And, by the way, he's under team control for a while.
And for the Blue Jays, you know, they got to the playoffs twice with Tulo. So, I mean, it worked out for them in that regard.
He wasn't
the guy they necessarily thought he was going to be. But, you know, he's been worth about 5 wins, most of that coming from his defense. But, you know, I would say it's kind of a wash right now. I mean, and that's considering every single guy, for the most part, that the Rockies got in that deal is not on the team anymore or irrelevant.
Right.
It's basically a too low for Jeff Hoffman. If that was basically what it ends up being straight up, in the long run, the Rockies probably win that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and you're getting a guy who's at the outset of his career versus a guy who, you know, players don't get better after they hit 30, just like those of us who are grown adults.
And especially, you know, shortstops who are perpetually injured.
Right, right.
They don't seem to get better.
And again, it's not us dumping on Tulo. It's just the reality, and that was the reason that it comes up is because yesterday is the anniversary, but that was a watershed moment because that was the first time that Jeff Breidich made a splash.
Yeah.
And we're in a spot right now where it looks like he's going to be doing the same. The Rockies did make one deal this week, and it seems like it's a pretty big one. Pat Neshek, the Phillies All-Star, is on his way to the Rockies. He will be with the team, presumably today, in Washington in exchange for 3 minor leaguers. Shortstop Jose Gomez has the best profile of those 3. He was the, I believe, 20th-ranked prospect in the Rockies system, according to MLB Pipeline, the only ranked one of the 3 pitchers. Alejandro Requena and J.D. Hammer also along in that deal. J.D. Hammer had of some rising stock.
Miss J.D. Hammer now. That sucks.
That's a bummer. And, you know, had thrown well. He was Jason Schwartz, our good buddy from the Lancaster Jethawks, tweeted the Phillies had a scout in attendance for Lancaster's games the couple of nights leading up to the trade. J.D. Hammer, the closer for the Jethawks this year, gets dealt. He'll be headed more than likely to the Florida State League, to the Clearwater Threshers in that system. But Hammer was a guy who, with some velocity increase this year, really had started to establish himself as a prospect. He's a Marshall product. He was a 24th round selection last year. Most notable because his headshot is fantastic. He wears like Rick the Wild Thing Vaughn glasses. But this year, he started the season with Asheville, went 4-1 with a 1.20 ERA in 24 games. Struggled a little bit with Lancaster. He did convert 6 out of 7 save opportunities, but his ERA was 5.25. Doesn't necessarily mean a lot because it is Lancaster, but he struck out 18 in 12 innings. Combined between Lancaster and Asheville this year, 65 Ks in 42 innings. So that's a piece you're giving up. But again, to give up a minor league reliever with a rising stock is one of 2 minor league pitchers and an infielder in Jose Gomez at a position where you're already pretty well loaded with depth. You know, I don't see this as a deal that really cost the Rockies much. And you're getting Pat Neshek, who has been amazing this year.
Yeah, 1.12 ERA in 43 appearances, spanning 40 and a third innings. He has struck out 45 in that time. He has only walked 5 batters.
And that is huge.
He's only given up 2 homers. I mean, his career ERA is 2.76. Like, among all relievers actively right now with at least 450 appearances in the big leagues, he is 6th behind Kimbrel, Jansen, Darren O'Day, Brad Ziegler, and Mark Melancon.
Good Lord.
That's not bad.
Not bad at all. Not bad.
5th in opponent average in that span, too. Kimbrel, Jansen, Clippard, Benoit, then Neshek. That's pretty good.
Yep, I would say so. I mean, I love this deal. I love this deal. He's a rental. He'll be a free agent at the end of the year. But his numbers have been fantastic this year. Not only that, Pat Neshek is a very likable guy. Our good buddy Brian Kilpatrick from Purple Row tweeted out, you know, he kept a website and a blog very active. He's got very strong music opinions. But Pat Neshek is also a guy who is very human. He suffered through the loss of his baby son, I think within 24 hours of the kid's birth a few years ago. You know, he was a guy who you and I got to watch him at the WBC this year. He's a fun dude to watch. He's got a, like I tweeted the other night, he's got a delivery that makes him look like he's pitching in 1913, which I love. Pat Neshek is really good, and they didn't give up that much, and that's the biggest thing. And I think the fact that that deal happened on July 26th suggests they're in it right now to make something out of this.
Yeah. I mean, he was probably the best right-handed reliever on the market.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
At least debatable.
Yeah. So the fact that they were able to get him without giving up much in return, really, at the end of the day, that's the biggest key to the entire transaction.
Right. So the deadline is 3 days away. We know and we knew that bullpen help was going to be a big point of emphasis. I don't believe that the Rockies are done pursuing bullpen help. We have seen them rumored to be interested in a whole lot of guys. The trade that would really intrigue me would be for somebody like Zach Britton. The Rockies have apparently been kicking the tires on Zach Britton. AJ Ramos, we've also heard that conversation a lot. Britton with the Orioles, AJ Ramos with the Marlins. So maybe there are some other names that you've heard about being good in baseball outside of the organization.
Britton would cost a lot.
Yeah, that would be the thing. That would be the thing. But if the Rockies,
but he would cost a lot.
If they swing a deal for somebody like Zach Britton, then I think we know that this organization is positive that this is a year that they can go to the playoffs and really be competitive. Yes. And that's exciting. You know, it was kind of a bizarro world moment the night of that trade when I thought to myself, you know what? Pat Neshek, somebody told him about that deal. And the idea went through Pat Neshek's mind, like, man, I'm leaving a team that's 29 games under 500
to go
jump into a playoff race. Yeah, the Phillies are 35-64. They're somehow 5 games worse in the win column than the San Francisco Giants. And yeah, Pat Neshek had a great time in Philadelphia, said he loved it there.
He
loved to return there. He was an all-star. Yeah. But you're leaving that to go to a team that's 13 games over and is leading the wild card race by 4.5 games over the Brewers, who are falling apart right now. That's exciting, and it's not often that a player gets traded to the Rockies and thinks, like, see you, suckers, I'm going to get into this playoff chase. And that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and he said leaving Philly's bittersweet, of course, but, you know, his family likes it there. But, you know, and they could like Denver, too.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't?
Yeah, exactly.
Pat Neshek does have some experience with Bud Black, by the way. He pitched for the Padres in 2011, 25 games that season for San Diego. His numbers since then, though, have been ridiculous.
It was ironically
everywhere.
His worst season.
Yeah, it was his worst season, which is strange being in San Diego. But his numbers, I mean, if you go look at Pat Neshek's baseball reference page, everything since really that San Diego season has been pretty brilliant. Very, very good in 2 seasons with the Astros. Outstanding in 2 seasons with the A's, and this year, 36 years old, he's been brilliant with the Phillies. So that's exciting. As the deadline stands right now, 3 days away, what do you think this team looks like on Tuesday?
Well, the thing is, you don't want to give up basically what 2 guys. You don't want to give up Brendan Rodgers, obviously. And I really think you don't want to give up our guest on the show today, Ryan McMahon. I think they have high hopes for him.
Yeah.
Maybe not this year, but within the next 2 years, whether it's playing first base next year or playing second base in 2 years after DJ LeMahieu's contract is up. So I think he's got to be as untouchable as anybody, along with Brendan Rodgers. We talked about this on the last episode. I think Riley Pint is a very expendable guy. Should they try to get somebody who has team control for maybe 1 or 2 more years, he would be the guy that should be the centerpiece of that deal, because he is the most projectable, the most publicized guy in the Rockies system, considering he was all part of Jeff Passan's book, The Arm.
Right.
He's got tremendous stuff, of course. And he should be the guy that would be the centerpiece of a deal if you could swing it for a guy with team control, whether it's someone like Zach Britton or, I mean, Sonny Gray. That's a pipe dream, of course. But Sonny Gray, yeah, someone along those lines, of course.
Yeah.
So.
They're not going to get you Darvish, apparently.
No. Couldn't handle
Coors.
And that's fine.
And that's fine. Yeah.
That's fine. They need an upgraded catcher. I think that's something that has to happen.
Yeah.
Hannigan, Walters, whomever is not getting it done. Now at all. Even the defense has regressed for Tony Walters.
Right.
The offense is not there at all. It's a black hole in terms of the lineup. So they're kicking the tires on Alex Avila, who I'm not as high on, but you know, he's a very good defensive guy. He handles the staff well.
He's had a fantastic offensive
best
season.
Offensive year of his career, right, which, you know, after 5 years of absolute crap, to have the best offensive year of your career at age, you know, 30, whatever he is, there's a lot of red flags there, but someone like Jonathan Lucroy, I think, would be very interesting in Denver. I think he could be a good bounce back candidate if they could swing a decent deal for him. That would be great because I think he's still young enough. He'd be a rental. They wouldn't have to give up a ton for him, I don't think. The Rangers are out of it if they're trading Darvish. So if you can swing that for someone like, you know, Brian Mundell and, you know, somebody else, I don't know. That would be a deal that I would definitely do. I think he would improve your team dramatically right away. But I think that's the biggest thing. I think they need at least one more arm, and I think they need a catcher. And that's the catcher first.
I think one of those two things will happen. I think they'll either swing it. I think it'd be great for the Rockies if they swing both deals. But it would surprise me if they make two prospect-heavy trades in order to acquire both a catcher and another arm. If the opportunity presented itself that they could package something and get somebody like Sonny Gray, I mean, if they were going to blow the doors off and go for a big move, then maybe it wouldn't be quite as surprising if they did that and they also swung a deal for somebody like Alex Avila. But the thing about Avila, too, it's a little strange. His father would have to be the one to trade him.
Yeah.
His father, Al, is the GM in Detroit, and that's a little weird.
Awkward.
But the other name that's been bandied about is kind of the bizarro Alex Avila this year, and that's Jonathan Lucroy, who has been terrible this season, but has a track record of being very good.
Coming off one of his best seasons of his career last year.
Yeah, which is so strange. And so there are these two options out there. I mean, if you want somebody to have a place to rebound offensively, this is the place to do it, hashtag Coors. But if you're also looking to capitalize on a guy who's been hot all season, this is the place to do it, hashtag Coors. So the options, I think, at the catching position are very attractive, and that is so badly needed. So badly needed. If the Rockies can get the bullpen back to where it was in April and into May, maybe with one acquisition like Neshek, then I think you feel pretty good about it. I don't think there's much of a likelihood that they swing two prospect-heavy deals. I think one of those things will go down.
I mean, you look at the Rockies catchers this year, they have the lowest OPS as a unit of any team in the National League, the second lowest of any team in baseball. Only the Blue Jays have been worse in terms of production from their catchers. So they need something there. And it's funny, they have a 620 OPS hitting .233 as a unit. They got a .308 BABIP. Like, so they've been the second worst unit in the league, and they've been kind of lucky.
Yeah. Not good.
Which is saying a lot.
Not good.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. If we were coming into 2017 and you said, what's going to be the biggest weakness for this team, position player wise, I guess catcher would have stood out, but not like this. Ugh.
We knew they weren't going to be a top 10 unit in the game.
Yeah.
But we didn't think they would be this bad.
I don't think anybody thought that Tony Walters was going to regress the way that he did. Especially, I mean, Tony started the season pretty strong offensively. Yeah, there were big splits between home and road.
Yeah.
But he started pretty strong offensively. Everything has fallen apart since then.
Yeah. I mean,
everything. So weird is he's regressed defensively considerably, too.
Yeah.
And that's not something that I think has an easy explanation, and it's certainly not something I expected to see.
No, and I mean, Tony Walters hit .360 in April. He's hitting .140 in July.
Whoa.
And Ryan Hannigan's not much better. But yeah, that's like, you wouldn't think that the defensive stuff, the framing would regress the way that it did.
Right, that would have just fallen off a table like it has this year.
Yeah, he was graded so highly last year, and this year it's the exact opposite.
That's another area where Jonathan Lucroy has really struggled this year, so that makes you pause a little bit also. But, I mean, the deadline, the overarching theme of all of this is it's exciting to be 3 days away from the deadline and know that the Rockies are buyers. Because there was a time we thought, oh, are they going to stand pat? Well, they're not. Stand pat. They are going to stand pat with Pat Neshek. Am I right, folks? Am I right, though? And Valeka. But, God, I'm so sorry. I'm trying to delete it. I'm sorry. But that's exciting. I mean, to know that they are going to be making moves or at least going to be aggressively eyeing moves, that's exciting. And as you and I were discussing before we got on today, the Rockies right now are 4.5 games clear of the next best team in the wild card race. And you think to yourself, like, oh, God, that's been shrinking. It was 7 games, and last week it was 5.5. Now it's 4.5. Yes, but that team is now the Milwaukee Brewers, who have lost 8 of their last 10, have slipped behind the Chicago Cubs in the Central, and are falling apart. Nobody expected that Brewers team to be in it as long as they have this year. I think the Brewers, starting in 2018, open up a very interesting window. They got a ton of talent coming up. But that team, I don't think the Brewers are going to be hanging in a playoff race for long.
They overachieved big time.
Very much so.
And kudos to them.
Good for them. That's great.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun guys on that team. Brett Phillips is awesome and so much fun to watch. Lewis Brinson's the same way.
Did you see the
There's
home
a lot
run
of fun
Brinson
talent.
Hit the other day?
Yes! It's a freak. They're a lot of fun to watch. That team is a lot of fun to watch. And the thing about the Brewers is there's a lot of just really good dudes on that team, too, which is very Rockies-like. I mean,
Except Ryan Braun and Matt Garza.
Well, right. I mean, in the system. Brett Phillips is one of the friendliest human beings you'll ever meet in your entire life. Lewis Brinson's the same way. You know, the dudes – how can you not root for somebody like Marcus Thames despite the
– Eric.
Oh, did I say Marcus?
Sure.
Every time. Wonder what Marcus Thames is doing these days.
And it's Marcus Thames.
He pronounces it the other way. He's like the river. He's an assistant hitting coach for the Yankees now.
Yeah.
Who knew? Okay, so anyway. But, you know, with those guys and Josh Haders of the world and the Brandon Woodruffs of the world, like, they're a fun and likable team and very much like the Rockies in that regard.
They were a year early.
Right, exactly. And you can make the same argument about the Rockies, but the Rockies have done it better. I don't think that there is much of a threat at this stage because the next best teams behind them are the Pirates and the Cardinals, who are both under 500. We won't really talk much about the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't a fun last few days. But I think you can feel a little bit more secure than just the fact that, like, oh, God, things are tightening up in the wild card standings. Maybe the Brewers catch fire again.
It comes to playing better on the road. I mean, that was the hallmark of this team and why they were so successful so early in the year. They started 24-10 on the road. They have lost 16 of their last 19 away from Coors Field. They're playing better at home now.
Which is good. But
they have been every single Rockies team in the 24 years of their existence over the last couple of – or last month, I guess, on the road.
You know, I do think that it is fair what people have pointed out that the Coors meme is going to stick around until they can prove that they can win consistently away from Coors. And that's just true. You know, it's also, as we have said a bajillion times, is playing at Coors Field an advantage? Yes. Is every other home ballpark in baseball an advantage? Yes. Everybody hits better at home than they do on the road. We've never attempted to make the argument that Coors Field is not a hitter's haven or is not an advantage for the Rockies, but it's also not, as the Pirates telecast said, like playing, what do they say? Like playing golf on the moon. Or that was the Tony Gwynn quote, like playing golf on the moon. I think it said like playing slow pitch softball on the moon, something ridiculous. It's so overblown in that regard. But, you know, that's your reality. You have to win there. It's good that they're doing that now, but you also can't go out dropping 16 and 19 on the road.
No, that's not how
that
works.
That is not good. Not good. So that's where the Rockies stand as of right now. We're recording this again on Friday. It does not look like the Rockies will be getting their game in tonight in Washington.
No, it does not.
Slated for a 7:05 Eastern time first pitch, but apparently there's flash flooding and all kinds of crazy rain around Washington. Maybe they're just trying to like wash away the entire city. At this stage, we'd all be okay with. So it'll be probably a rain-shortened series in Washington. Although, They might have to play two because this is the last time. Those two teams
It would suck if they had to do a doubleheader.
Yeah, that would.
Or had to come back to Washington. That's
in
a long
July,
trip.
Exactly. That's true. On an off day. I have no idea if those two teams share an off day at any point.
Yeah, I mean they only have looks like one more East Coast trip, and that's when they go to Atlanta in late August. But they don't have an off day around it.
Right.
So it would have to be something just awful. Yeah.
Gross. It doesn't look like they'll play tonight. But this series, this is a chance to make a statement, and we're going to get to Ryan McMahon here in a minute. But the Rockies got their heads beaten in by the Washington Nationals at Coors Field earlier this year. You want to make people start believing again, go to Washington and play well. You know, for people that have started to fall off the bandwagon, this is a team that came into your ballpark and over the course of three games scored 42 runs and beat you 42-21 combined.
And the pitching matchup favors the Rockies, oddly enough, in this series. You got Marquez, Freeland, and John Gray going against Tanner Roark, Eric Fetty making his major league debut, and Edwin Jackson.
Edwin Jackson.
That Edwin Jackson.
Who has played for now, I think, 20 major league organizations or something like that.
He's only 33 years old.
I know! How is that possible? Edwin Jackson has been around for 75 years, and he's still only 33.
He made his debut in 2003.
By the way, did you know that Edwin Jackson was born in Germany?
I did not know that until this
I'm assuming it's like an Air Force base or something.
Military
like that.
Kid, like Jeff Baker was.
Right, right. But yeah, he was born in Germany. Played for the Dodgers in 2003, then again in 2004 and 2005. Played for the Devil Rays in 06 and 07, then the Rays in 08, the Tigers in 09, the D-backs in 2010, the White Sox in 2011, the St. Louis Cardinals in 2012, the White Sox 2010 to 2011 and the Cardinals were in 2011, then the Nationals in 2012, the Cubs 2013 to 2015, the Braves in 2015, the Marlins in 2016, the Padres also in 2016, the Orioles this year, and now the Nationals. 16 major league organizations for Edwin Jackson. What on earth? And I think he's played in minor league systems where he didn't make the big leagues too.
That's unreal.
That's incredible. Maybe not. I could be wrong on that, but whew, lordy. But yeah, like those pitching matchups favor the Rockies. You'd think that you're going to get a jolt of energy with an acquisition like Pat Neshek.
I don't know,
man. This is a big weekend. It's a big weekend. All right, that's enough of that for right now. Let's get to it. Ryan McMahon, the third-ranked prospect in the Colorado Rockies organization via MLB Pipeline last night and all season long, crushing the ball with AAA Albuquerque. McMahon has five games this year, just in AAA alone, in which he has four hits or more. He's played 47 games there. Ryan McMahon in 47 games in AAA is slashing .386, .407, .634. He's been held hitless in all of 8 of 47 games in AAA. And you'd say like, oh, Albuquerque, hashtag Topes Park like it's Coors Field. Yeah, he's hitting .423 at home with an .1165 OPS. On the road, he's hitting .347 with a .907 OPS. So Ryan McMahon, pretty good everywhere. Joins the show to talk about learning new positions and playing football in high school and Twitter and a whole bunch of other stuff. Ryan McMahon coming up next. Super excited for this week's guests on the show as the Rockies get set to kick off a playoff push here toward the stretch run in August and September. And one of the faces that you may be seeing in Denver sooner rather than later is Ryan McMahon, who joins us from AAA Albuquerque. Ryan, what's going on, man?
How's it going, guys?
Good, good. Thanks a ton for coming on with us. So this is, we talked last night for a story for MILB, and I basically phrased this question to you when we got things started last night, which is, what the hell are PCL pitchers, like what could people possibly be thinking about trying to get you out of this stage? You're hitting almost .400 in AAA, and it's not like it's been a week, like it's been almost 2 months. What has this been like for you since you got to Albuquerque?
It's been a lot of fun, man. I mean, you look at our lineup 1 through 9, there's a lot of really good hitters. So pitchers really don't have anywhere to go with it. They can't just put you on base because the next guy can hurt you. So, you know, they have to pitch you. They have to throw you strikes. And, you know, as a team, we're doing a really good job of not missing our pitches when we get them.
Ryan, last year with Hartford, bizarre season. You guys are on the road all year. You get sent back to Hartford to start this season, tear it up there, and then you get this promotion. When you were told that you were heading up to Albuquerque, after really conquering the Double A level, what was your mindset knowing that? All right, now I'm here. Now I'm one step below the major leagues. You're going to a hitter friendly environment. You know so many of those guys on that roster that you've played with, and that you know that lineup is going to be formidable. I mean, when you got to Triple A, what was your mentality like?
Just like you said, you're one step away, and it's something you've been working for your whole life. So you're honestly just excited to get up there. And it was cool to see a lot of the guys that I knew from playing with prior, Jordan Patterson, who I hadn't seen him in a while, but he's always been a really good buddy of mine. So I was just excited to see those guys and take another step.
And for you last year, Ryan, was like the first year you really seemed to struggle in professional ball. How did you work through it last year? I know it was a tough year in Hartford, especially, like as Tyler mentioned, everybody's on the road the entire season. It's an odd year. But what was your offseason like to come back and then turn it around the way you did this season?
Honestly, it was just a lot of getting back to what I used to do. A lot of things I used to do really well that I had kind of gotten away from. Just getting back to those things, staying consistent with that in my approach, and just letting my athleticism work.
Well, what was the biggest thing for you to start clicking this year? I mean, what did it start from the beginning of spring training, or you realize like, hey, it's a brand new season, I know what I'm doing this year, what I did wrong last year? Or was it something that like a coach told you maybe early on in the season that you kind of put to use and were able to put the numbers you were?
To be 100% completely honest, it happened like the last 2 days of spring training. Tim Doherty and I didn't play in the last two spring training games. I just went into the cage with Tim Doherty, and we literally, I probably took, probably 200 swings both of those days just in like a short time period. And yeah, we just, he was like, okay, look, this is what you're doing. You need to figure out how it makes sense for you. And, once he kind of said that and gave me free range to kind of, go with my own swing thoughts and not try to think about other things, I was able to kind of connect the dots with old swing thoughts and stuff like that. And I honestly figured it out the last 2 days of spring training.
That is amazing. Well, and take us through, I mean, because so much in baseball is predicated on the fact that when you go to the plate, you feel confident, an approach is working, a swing path is working, all that type of stuff. So as that starts building in Hartford, one of the things you mentioned last night is in Albuquerque, you've been able to really figure out what your approach is going to be going into a game versus a given starter, whether it's going to be an inside approach, an outside approach, how they're going to work you. That alone, I mean, knowing that you've got a plan going into each at bat and the fact that you can be so confident in your success this year, how has that helped keep it going? I mean, the idea that you're going to be able to go out and more often than not in AAA, you're going to get multiple hits during a game. What does that do for you just in terms of the way that you feel going up to an at bat?
Yeah, you're 100% right. Confidence is extremely key in baseball, and having confidence in my swing in general, just gives me a better opportunity to go up there and execute a different approach, given off what the pitcher is going to do to me. So, that confidence is just huge right now and just trying to keep it going.
Ryan, this year has been different for you, not only in the offensive changes from 2016, but you're also learning a new position this year in addition to learning a new position last year. I was on the backfields at one point this year at Salt River Fields, and I remember seeing this dude taking grounders at second and thinking to myself, that looks like Ryan McMahon, but there's no chance that Ryan McMahon is taking grounders at second. And now here you are, Ryan McMahon, professional second baseman, in addition to playing at third and first. So you've got this offensive success this year that's come along also with your natural position at third base. You're seeing time there. You're also seeing time at first, which you started learning last year. And now you're playing second, too. And so many guys, if you're learning one new position, it's a struggle offensively to keep it going because of that workload defensively. But keeping this all together this year, what has that process been like, learning everything new defensively while also having this offensive success?
I just want to be put on the record that I've told them since day one that I could play second base.
Interesting.
I used to always joke around about it, never thinking it would actually happen. And when I got sent down from big league camp, they're like, hey, you got a middle infield glove. We're gonna start putting you in second base. And I was taken back big time. I thought it was so funny that it was finally happening after
that
all the
years. That is amazing.
I would kind of chirp the coaches like, come on, put me in there. Go, let me play second. Like during the instructs or something. And yeah, it's been fun though, man. You know, I love playing everywhere. I mean, a bunch of different positions is fun. You know, and just trying to be more valuable. You know, playing different positions in the NL is extremely important. So you know, just trying to be more valuable for the team and help them any way that I can.
I mean, versatility has been the key word for the Rockies all season long. Yeah. Can you catch? Like, can you pitch? Can you play the outfield?
No, I'm terrible at. Oh man, I could tell you a story, but I'll save it for a different time.
All right. If you have to, but what was the toughest transition for you? Second base or first base?
Probably second. You know, first and third, it's just a little different spin. But yeah, second base. But there's a lot more to do. There's a lot more running around. You know, you're more involved on every play, so it's just kind of getting back into it. I had actually played second base basically my whole life coming up before high school, so you know, it was just kind of getting back into it.
This is something I've always wondered, Ryan. Like, when you're playing well in AAA, like, do players go on social media and see if fans online are clamoring for their call up? I feel like if I was playing in AAA, I'd be Twitter searching my name on like an hourly basis, especially when it comes to the trade deadline, because you know it could be one of two things for a guy like you who is playing really well, right near the big league, still very, very young. You could be maybe a key centerpiece in a trade the Rockies might be trying to make, or you could be replacing some guy who gets traded up at the big league level. Is that something you guys do in the locker room a lot?
You know, I got lucky. I don't think a lot of people do it. I don't really know, but I got really lucky. You know, we had Don Brown here earlier this year, and, you know, he was kind of talking to me about all this stuff because, I mean, obviously he was a big-time dude coming up.
Right.
So he was just like, man, you know, there's always going to be all this talk, all this stuff. You got to just stay focused, stay where your feet are, and play the game. So I've been really trying to do that. You know, I mean, I do follow all the trade rumor stuff and all that stuff on Twitter, but yeah, I've kind of stayed away from it and just tried to play my game.
All right, Anthony asked you a question that he's always wondered. Here's a question I've always wondered about, and I would imagine that I know the answer, and the answer is probably no, and it's even dumb to think this, but the numbers at each position for you this year have been fascinating. When you were in Hartford, your numbers at first base were your best offensive numbers. Your OPS, 1020. At second base, it was 931. At third base, it's 795. In AAA, different. At first base, 871. Second base, 1032 OPS. Third base, a 1429 OPS. I would imagine that the answer to this is no, but we see that so often with guys who play multiple positions that, coincidentally or not, when you're playing one position, sometimes offensively you seem to play a lot better. Is there anything that factors into that, or is that just chance?
Oh, no, there definitely could be. You know, I mean, when you're playing a different position, you know, you might feel more confident there, feel a little bit more swag when you're at, say, up the middle or something like that. So, you know, you kind of carry that over into your plate appearances. But for me personally, no, because I'm still trying to learn everything and just wrap my head around it. So for me personally, no, but I could definitely see that, you know. You feel better at one spot, so you just kind of carry it over to your bats.
All right, good. That doesn't make me feel like quite as much of an idiot then asking that question, because I've always wondered that.
That's a good question.
Ryan, let's go back to the early stages in your career. Drafted out of Modern Day, everybody kind of knows as quarterback high. You played the quarterback position there, drafted. You get into pro ball, second round in 2013, and your climb has been really quick since then. Grand Junction that year, Asheville the next year. You skip over the short season Class A level, then Modesto in 2015, then Hartford in 2016. So it's been really one step every year until returning to Hartford at the beginning of this season. You dominate there. You're up in Albuquerque. With the way that this has been so incremental and so constant, do you ever look back at where you were when you were 18 years old and think, like, man, this is a thing that I either A, had no idea was going to be something that I would deal with in pro ball, or B, yeah, this has been exactly what I would have expected by this point 5 years into my career?
Yeah, honestly, coming into it, I had no idea how any of this worked. I thought you could get called up from rookie ball when I first got drafted. So.
Only if you're Alan Cordoba, on the Padres.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah, I just kind of, you know, have gone with the flow, and whatever happens, happens. But, yeah, it's crazy to think, man. It's been a crazy ride, and it's been a lot of fun, and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
Well, and you played with a lot of guys growing up, you know, in through the Rocky system year by year, guys like David Dahl and guys like Raymel Tapia. Like, what's it been like being teammates with those guys for so many years and for all of you to be this close to the big leagues? I know they've made their appearances in the big leagues so far, but Dahl coming back this year, Tapia right now, you're all back in Albuquerque right now. What's it like, the camaraderie that you three have together, since you've been there every step of the way with each other?
Yeah, you know, we kind of have a special core group that's kind of, you know, moved up through the ranks together, and it's been really cool seeing everybody. I mean, a lot of them have gone to make their debuts and stuff, and it's just, you know, it's honestly really just cool because you see your good friends that you've grinded with in low A, high A, double A, you know, rookie ball, everything, and, you know, you just see them make it, and just it makes you want to, you know, get there too. So it's been really fun, and, you know, it's an honor playing with all those guys.
Ryan, this is a question that also kind of pertains to, you know, the Rockies as a larger franchise philosophical thing. The Rockies have long been in love with quarterbacks, and Todd Helton was one in college. Yeah. Seth Smith was one in college. Kyle Parker was one in college. The Rockies drafted Michael Vick, which people probably don't really remember. That was, I don't think, quite as serious of a thing. But still, you were a quarterback in high school. And, you know, we talk so much nowadays about single sport specialization among athletes, and especially among baseball players, where I think it can really be detrimental in a pitching sense, especially because guys are wearing out arms. It's why we have so many Tommy John surgeries, et cetera, et cetera. But for being somebody that played multiple sports, how do you think being a quarterback, being a leader and a guy that everything is centered on the football field, how does that contribute to your mindset, your approach, your mentality on a baseball field, and vice versa? Did you learn anything in baseball that you remember in football drawing on from the standpoint of your competitiveness as an athlete?
You know, I'd say more football to baseball. You know, football is a completely different animal. You can get completely psyched and go out there and have some crazy great game, you know, playing on purely adrenaline, where in baseball you got to try to slow it down and stuff like that. But yeah, you know, I learned a lot from football, made some of my best friends from football. So yeah, I mean, those experiences, football is just a different animal than baseball. But yeah, you know, life lesson wise and stuff like that, I learned a lot from football.
Well, I mean, and you went to modern day. I mean, modern day, like Tyler said, is quarterback university. I mean, it's Matt Leinart, it's Matt Barkley, Colt Brennan. I mean, who were some of the guys that you kind of looked up to when you were coming through high school? Because those guys were at that point, when you're coming up, were legendary, right?
Yeah. Now, the guy that I looked up to big time was Matt Barkley. He had just been there, just graduated when I was like in eighth grade or something. So yeah, that was the dude that I looked up to. He was unreal in high school. He set all these records and stuff like that. He was the man.
And modern day is a big time program too. I mean, Danny Espinosa, the second baseman, he went to modern day as well. Yeah. He was coming up the natural system. He was one of the first guys I got into broadcasting with in 2009 in Potomac. He was one of the Nationals' top prospects coming through that time. So he kind of led me into the whole like Long Beach State and modern day kind of system they have down in Southern California.
The pipeline.
My first introduction to it. It was awesome. Yeah, the pipeline.
Yeah. Danny's got his picture and name all over that school. So if you go look at the baseball like locker room and stuff, there's like seven or eight pictures of Danny Espinosa on there. So,
Ryan, do you ever like sit around on a Saturday and watch college football and think like, yeah, I could have done that?
No, I don't.
That's a good answer.
Oh man, I was a decent high school quarterback, but oh man, the stuff that those college quarterbacks are doing nowadays, it's crazy. I mean, Baker Mayfield, like. All those athletes that are just through that. I mean, I was a guy, I would drop back, and there was no way I was getting out of the pocket. If the defender got to me, I was going down. I was not running around. I was
just like Peyton Manning, man. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm taking three steps, and I'm either throwing it or I'm going down.
Ryan, a couple more for you. We'll get you out of here. One of the things that we touched on last night, you came a double shy of the cycle. So did David Dahl, who was hitting one spot in front of you in the lineup. This season has been so weird for him, and he's had a lot of those. And you told me last night that you kind of call him the most unlucky baseball player you've ever seen. The injuries have been so bizarre. The torn hamstring a few years ago, the ruptured spleen in New Britain, and then this year with the rib reaction. This is a stage for him where it seems like he's ready to bust out, and it's coming along now with you guys with the Topes. What have you seen from him just in terms of getting healthy, getting his timing back, and the fact that, you know, like you said, he looks healthy and he looks like he's out there having fun, and it's great for you guys to see that from him as well.
Right, yeah. I mean, David's always been a great baseball player. Every level I've seen him play at. So, you know, just the fact of getting him healthy and keeping him out there on the field and letting him do his thing. But, yeah, you know, he's feeling good right now, and obviously what he did at the plate last night, he was looking real good. So, you know, hopefully he continues that and, you know, just gets the ball rolling.
All right, man, last thing for you. I mean, we would be remiss if we did not ask you about the fact that you're in a system right now that is getting set for a playoff race, and the Rockies coming into the day today still 4.5 up on the next best team in the wild card race, which is the Milwaukee Brewers. They've really been struggling lately, so the Rockies are in a very good spot as it pertains to the National League playoff picture. You guys being one step down the ladder, knowing that you can contribute really at any time. We've seen guys who have already done that this year, Raimel Tapia and other guys who have come up and made an impact. How often do you guys talk about that at the AAA level, about what it's like being in the system right now, the fact that the big league club is contending for a playoff berth, there's so much talent that's still on the way in your class and behind you guys? What is that mood like right now for an organization that's having a lot of success and seems to be set up for a lot of success in the next few years?
Yeah, you know, I think everybody's excited, honestly. I think top to bottom in the whole organization, you know, the Rockies are in a good spot to make it to the playoffs. And I think, you know, every minor leaguer, every big leaguer, every front office guy, I think everybody's just really excited, you know, to get back to the playoffs and have some playoff baseball going on in Denver.
He is Ryan McMahon. He's the third-ranked Rockies prospect according to MLB Pipeline's updated midseason rankings. And you can find him on Twitter. He is at @Ry_McMahon. And, Ryan, we can't thank you enough for doing this, man, letting us bother you on a Friday morning. Are you on the way to the ballpark from Starbucks? You said yesterday we might be talking when you were leaving Starbucks. Is this post-Starbucks run?
Nope. I'm sitting outside Starbucks. I didn't want you guys to hear my order.
So you've just been the poor guy who were making sit around in the New Mexico sun for 20 minutes?
Yep.
Okay,
good. God, we're awful.
And everybody's looking at me.
Ryan McMahon placed on 7-day DL with severe sunburn due to podcast interview. All right, we'll take the heat for that. We'll take the blame. Ryan, thanks a ton, man. This has been great.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Big thanks to Ryan McMahon for joining the show. He was
awesome.
What
a guy.
He's great. That was really great. Ryan, again, is on Twitter. He's at @Ry_McMahon. I would think we're going to see him relatively soon.
Yeah, you'd have to imagine so. Maybe September this year, but...
Yeah. And that's a distinct possibility that he's just going to be a September guy, but he's a better offensive option than Pat Valeika. He's not quite as versatile defensively because he doesn't play short, but... I think if you have the option of a Ryan McMahon that can play both corner infield positions and second base versus Pat Valeika, McMahon is your better option off of the bench. And you also have Alexi Amarizo, who can play short in a pinch if you need to get Trevor Story a day off.
And what do you do with Cargo eventually, man?
Yeah. And that's going to be our final topic, because I know we've gone long already. But there was a time where it looked like Cargo was going to start getting it figured out. There have been a couple of those times, I think, quote unquote, this year, but there was a stretch over the last homestand. And to be fair, Cargo is riding a very modest 7-game hitting streak.
Incredibly modest.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, there was a time he had multiple hits in 3 out of 4 games against the Padres and the Pirates from July 18th through the 23rd. And it looked like, okay, maybe he's starting to get it figured out. He's not, man. Cargo
is 6 homers in 84 games, 300 at bats.
Yeah.
6 homers. 26 ribbies.
It's more than time. If this is a team that is playing for a wild card berth, that's trying to run down the top spot in that race, how much longer can you put Cargo in the lineup?
I mean,
and I never thought that we'd be having this conversation.
He had never had an OPS lower than 723, and that was the big outlier back in 2014 when he got hurt. His previous lowest OPS was 855. He's at 642 this year.
642.
Like that just screams injury. He didn't lose his ability to play baseball that quickly. He has to be hurt in some way, right? I mean, even he hit 298 last year.
Yeah. Man, I don't know. It's mind-boggling, and it's really
literally
depressing.
It bottles
to watch.
The mind. Yeah.
It bottles the mind.
No, it's
so
depressing
to watch, man.
Yeah.
His ground ball percentage this year is 51.1%. And Cargo's always had, I mean, they've been pretty high. It's been 47.1% in 2014 and 2015, 46.2% last year. But even there, you know, I think the balls were hit harder and they were hit for more hits, which isn't very scientific, but you know, the numbers bear it out. 51.1%. Ground ball percentage this year, and his fly ball percentage is down to 29%.
Yeah, seems like higher than that.
Yeah, it really seems like 150%. which it has not actually been the case somehow. I don't know, man. It's just like at this point, I don't know how you continue justifying putting him in the lineup every day.
No.
Because I think we're way past the point where you say to yourself, like, oh, at some point he's going to have one of those 2-3 week stretches where he goes off. He hasn't, and it's the end of July.
And Raimel Tapia, he's right. 314, 369, 480 for an 850 OPS in 40 games and got bumped down to AAA. Yep. And since he's gone down, he's only hit 308, you know? Yeah. He needs to be on your team right now if your team wants to contend. And I love Carlos Gonzalez. I want to know what happened. If he's hurt, go on the DL, man.
Exactly. Like, something.
Like, listen, don't be a hero. If you want to be on the DL for a month, come back in September when the rosters expand. And ease back into it and get ready. If you're going to make a playoff push, great. Be the Carlos Gonzalez you were even last year. But you're not that guy right now. You were a shell yourself. You know, get healthy. Bring back Tapia. They can put the best nine on the field they possibly can. Because right now, Carlos Gonzalez is not part of that nine.
It's very weird. There was a post on FanGraphs back in January of 2016 titled "The Decline of Carlos Gonzalez, Star Player." And the argument there was Cargo dealt with a ton of injuries in those early seasons in his career, and maybe it's just possible that now all that stuff has taken that much of a toll, and he just hasn't aged well. But, I mean, there was a time when Cargo was a top 10 outfielder in baseball, and right now he's not even a guy who looks like an everyday major leaguer.
He was literally an all-star
last
year.
So brutal. Yeah, last year! It's just so brutal to watch. And you would think that it is something more than just, it's ineffectiveness. It's something. Like, there has to be something else that's gone on. But there's no obvious injury.
I mean, he strained his shoulder. He went on the DL in late June.
Right.
I mean, if that's something that's keeping him, it's still nagging him, then, dude, go back on the DL.
And wasn't he hit by a pitch in the hand or the wrist earlier this year, too?
Yeah.
Maybe there's something lingering from that, but, God, man, I don't
figure it out,
I don't
guys.
Know.
Come on.
I don't know. It's at this stage, how you can justify continuing to start him every day while Raimel Tapia crushes the ball around AAA. Not only that, David Dahl's getting healthy, as you heard Ryan McMahon say. So, I mean, there is a very difficult conversation that's going to have to come up pretty soon. I would imagine it won't be until after the deadline. I don't think the Rockies are going to go to Washington and sit Carlos Gonzalez, but I would think after the deadline, Jeff Breidich and Bud Black and those guys are going to sit around and say, what do we do about this?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, you have to make a choice at some point. It's a hard decision, but these are the decisions you're paid to make.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is, too, and this is a topic that we're going to have to discuss as the offseason comes up, but do the Rockies offer Carlos Gonzalez a qualifying offer? Because if you do, and he signs elsewhere, then you get the draft pick. If not,
but it's also not as good of a draft pick anymore.
Right, right. And if you do and he takes it, then you got Carlos Gonzalez on the hook for a ton of money next year. If you don't offer it, then you lose Cargo for nothing. You lose a franchise luminary for nothing.
But you replace him with guys like Dahl and Tapia.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they'll be okay to make that deal.
It's a bad PR move, maybe, but Cargo's not necessarily endearing himself to the fans. I know he's had a wonderful career with the Rockies. He's probably one of the top 5-6 players in Rockies history. But, you know, it's about being pragmatic at a certain point.
Yep. Yep. Well, I'd imagine it's a topic we'll be talking about over the next few weeks.
Sure we will. And we hope Cargo figures it out. We love
exactly
Cargo.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like, Cargo's so much fun when he's good, and he's still playing well defensively. Is he the Cargo of old? No, but he's still fun to watch defensively. And when he does have it going, when he's crushing balls in the warning track and stuff, which is seemingly all it's been this year because very few of them have cleared the wall, he's still Cargo, and he's still so much fun to watch, and we love Cargo, and we hope he gets it going. But it's been rough this year. The Rockies slated for 3 games this weekend in Washington, weather permitting. Coming up next week, they are back at home, 3 against the New York Metropolitans. And then Pat Neshek will get a look at his former team when the Philadelphia Phillies come to town from Friday through Sunday. Sunday, by the way, always a popular day on Rockies Twitter. That is Faith Day for all faiths that are Christian. So that's coming up. Then on the road to Cleveland and Miami, followed by a homestand against the Braves and the Brewers. You know, we talked about a couple weeks ago, the schedule very much favored the Rockies because they were not playing good teams. They haven't taken advantage of it as of yet. I mean, they did win 6-7, but then you go on the road to St. Louis, you play like garbage, they lose three straight. Now you play the one difficult team in this stretch. Eek. Got to make things happen.
Sure do.
And hopefully the Nishek acquisition is what kicks them in the pants.
That'd be great.
So that'll do it. Ryan McMahon, big thanks. Again, at @Rye_McMahon on Twitter. And a big thanks to all of you for tuning in.
Yeah.
We love you. He's Anthony.
Bye.
I'm Tyler. Bye. Hello?
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 Oh, hello.
Oh, hello. What if we just did the entire show in really bad, like, Eastern European accents? Oh, hello.
Hello.
We're here to talk about the Rockies baseball.
Let's talk about Rockies.
I think we could do it. I think we could pull it off.
We could totally pull it off.